think I'm entitled.
You want answers.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
News alert and reading this. The U.S. Supreme Court rules in favor of former President Donald Trump in his appeal of a Colorado ballot disqualification. That applies to Colorado. In all likelihood, it will apply to other states as well. Live to Shannon Bream for her initial analysis and reaction now. Did you have the inside word, Shannon? Hello.
Okay. So what we have from the court this morning is this decision in favor of President Trump. They essentially say the judgment of the Colorado Supreme Court that he could be kicked off the ballot in this manner does not stand, has to be overturned. There is discussion at the end of the main decision that says, you know, there would be essentially a patchwork across the states.
And that is a key point, a patchwork across the nation, where if one state keeps Trump off the ballot, another state, a red state, will say, we won't allow Biden to be on the ballot. You can't have that. Common sense says you can't have it. But this is what the blue states were pushing, thinking they could get away with more uncommon sense and stupidness. But the Supreme Court struck it down today on a unanimous ruling. But this decision effectively ends the long-shot effort by any state, that includes Illinois, one of the latest, standing by ready to drop Trump from the ballot. This is going to be big for the president, former president, and his race for the White House. A little bit later, we're going to be joined by Hans von Spakovsky, constitutional expert with the Heritage Foundation. He'll give us more details of not just what this means now, but down the road and some of the inner dealings that took place inside the court. First of all, let me welcome you. Thanks for having you join us again. Here we are, March 4, 2024, the first of 2 hours of Larry Connors USA, back-to-back right here for you, Monday through Friday night, 6 to 8 p.m. And let me remind you, News Talk STL is the number one for the most live and local programs you're going to hear, conservative programs in this area. Number one, most conservative programs are to be found right here. Now, in this program, we also give you the other side a lot so you can make your own decision. And then I presume, or rather present my view and opinion. You can like it or not. That's fine. This is America. Everyone's entitled to an opinion. My viewpoint is primarily conservative, sometimes independent, and sometimes a few points that might go to the liberal side. Not too far to the liberal side. But as always, thanks to have you on board and reminding you when we're on the air, we are streaming video at News Talk STL, Facebook, Rumble, YouTube, and Twitter. Or on Larry Connors USA, Facebook, Rumble, Twitter, no YouTube. They blocked us. They will not let this program back on. Why? I don't know. And you know what? I really don't care. But I'm glad to have you listening. And, of course, we always appreciate you supporting our sponsors because they're going to become even more important as we move forward as a George Soros-funded group takes over most other stations in this area and across the nation, 200-plus stations. And do you think George Soros is going to allow this kind of program to exist on those stations? No, of course not. You're going to get more leftist propaganda on a daily basis. And don't even think you're going to get some balance. It's not going to happen. So the decision by the Supreme Court today, there are a couple of things that I want to break down for you before we go to Hans later in this hour. For one thing, one of the justices who joined with the liberal justices on the Trump ballot ban, it might be a surprise to some of you. Even though it was a unanimous victory at the Supreme Court, there was a 5-4 decision among the justices under the surface and that got joined by one of his nominees, conservative Justice Amy Coney Barrett. Amy Coney Barrett joining the court's three liberals, criticizing their five conservative colleagues for going further than they needed to in resolving the Trump case, by also undermining that the only way for the 14th Amendment to be enforced is through a statute by Congress. Now, that's going to be a key point I want to bring up with Hans von Spakovsky. What was the deciding point in his view as to why Amy Coney Barrett thought the court had gone too far? But let me stress again, when it comes to states banning Trump from the ballot, it is a unanimous decision. All nine justices say, no, you can't do that. And again, it gets back to the issue of a patchwork quilt across the nation when it comes to your presidential election. And here's additional breakdown provided by Fox News.
There is discussion at the end of the main decision that says, you know, there would be essentially a patchwork across the states. This was one of the worries that the justices had, and the questions that came together in argument were, what happens if we tell one state they can do this? The chief justice said, what if one state decides, okay, I'm kicking off a Republican, another state says, okay, I'm kicking off a Democrat, and then we get down to just a handful of states that actually have all of the candidates' names on the ballot, what would that do to this country? So it sounds like the majority of the court has come together in this voice to say what happened in Colorado is not correct. It sounds like they're saying states don't have this power, but essentially this is something that should be left to Congress.
And there is maybe a sticking point for Judge Barrett and the other justices that sided with her on that point. Let me give you the take as it's being presented by the leftist media, state-controlled media, as I like to call them, CNN, and here's the way they read. The headline is, takeaways from Trump's big win at the Supreme Court, the 14th Amendment case. They're even classifying it on CNN as a big win for Donald Trump. Let me read this as I'm looking at it for the first time. Again, they're repeating that Trump should not be removed, could not be removed from the ballot of Colorado or any other state because of his actions of January 6, 2021. That makes him, according to these rulings, Trump's actions leaving him eligible under the 14th Amendment's insurrection ban, as they were claiming. The court ruled no, doesn't do that. Now, let me give you another take from CNN, and they do point out in this headline, justice has rejected an insurrectionist ban challenge in Colorado, a decision with nationwide implications. Now, when they ban that you can't keep Trump off the ballot because of so-called insurrectionists, that goes back to the Civil War times. That's what they were trying to pull and bring to the forefront and say, because after the Civil War, we had members of the Civil Confederacy that were not allowed to hold office, either appointed or elected, because we did not want them to create another effort to overthrow the government. Now, that was an insurrection during the, quote, Civil War, or war between the states. So even CNN admits, in this case, they failed to do that. That insurrection clause just does not apply today. But you also have to keep in mind, despite this ruling, you still have the left pushing, and they will continue to push, false narratives that minorities are being denied votes, not just because of what took place here with this Trump case and him being on the ballot, but they're trying to tell you that minorities are still being denied votes. A perfect example, Sunday, we had the Department of Justice, Merrick Garland, was in a Selma black church with these words.
The right to vote is still under attack. And that is why the Justice Department is fighting back. That is why one of the first things I did when I came into office was to double the size of the voting section of the Civil Rights Division. That is why we are challenging efforts by states and jurisdictions to implement discriminatory, burdensome, and unnecessary restrictions on access to the ballot, including those related to mail-in voting, the use of drop boxes, and voter ID requirements.
You know, I don't know why they want to continue to harp on and try to make minorities look so stupid that they don't know how to get an ID, a voter ID. They have to have an ID to travel on a plane. Well, unless you're an illegal alien, I guess we have to give that credit to that group. But an ID is essential in this nation right now. Why wouldn't it be required for a vote? That's not a denying of the vote. It just says we need to know that you are who you are. And you should want that. And minority groups know this. They're seeing through this ploy, finally, saying, you know, I understand that someone else might go and apparently claim to be me using a utility card with my address they pulled out of the trash, and they get to vote ahead of me, so I get there. My vote's denied. Oh, I can cast a ballot, but it's put aside to be looked at later if necessary. That's how you deprive people of a vote. You vote ahead of them. You take their franchise ability away. And yet here's Merrick Garland again carrying the water for the progressives who say, you just can't force voter ID. That's just wrong. The whole concept they present is wrong. All right, so let's go back to Biden and Trump's visit to the border last week. What did they actually accomplish? Well, obviously, Trump accomplished and succeeded in highlighting the issue even more. And remember, Biden went because Trump was going. After it got announced Trump was going, Biden said, well, me too, I'm going. Trump went to Eagle Pass, I should say, which is a hot spot. Still is. Biden went down to Brownsville, where it's kind of quiet and calm now. See, I don't see that much travel here. Well, you're not looking, are you? But what did he do other than trying to show that he was in control and that he has secured the border? He continues to falsely claim that Trump does not want the border shut. He wants the chaos for voting opportunities. Florida Congresswoman Kat Kamamak had this response.
Let's be clear. Biden's visit to the border was not about securing the border. It was about securing votes. That is all that visit was, because if he was truly interested in securing the border, he would rescind his executive orders that rolled back all of President Trump's actions to secure the border. He would have been serious if he had gone to, say, Del Rio, El Paso, Tucson, San Diego, any sector that has been seeing thousands of illegals crossing on any given day. But instead, as I said, this was about securing the vote, not securing the border. It's a joke, and we all know it.
She's right. She's exactly right. It's a joke. He did not go, as I just said, he did not go to the areas where the hordes are still coming across. Brownsville, Texas, a little quieter, considerably. You know why? Governor Abbott. Governor Abbott putting up the buoys across the Rio Grande, and then also, despite the government forcing him to take them down, putting up razor wire. They forced him to move that back, but it's still in place. So they go farther to the west. And now they're actually going beyond Texas, and they found a great loophole going into California. Nothing to keep them from going in there. And that is a sanctuary state, don't you know? They know. So they continue to flood across. And, of course, once they're in the country, they can go anywhere. If they're stopped at the border and they're giving a parole for violating our federal law, although we're not enforcing it anyway, you're free to travel about the country. And they obviously sometimes choose New York, and many have chosen Chicago. Listen to this report from a Chicago TV station of what they're being facing on a daily basis now.
State leaders say they've been told to expect up to 25 buses of migrants each day.
Nine more buses carrying people arrived in Chicago today. That is the most in one day ever.
Migrant buses coming from Texas are now stopping in the suburbs. There's a crackdown, as you know, a new one here in Chicago.
In a city known for welcoming all, the situation in Chicago takes a dramatic turn. Now stopping the hundreds of buses filled to the brim with migrants, some asylum seekers, and others illegal immigrants with criminal backgrounds.
The city of Chicago has impounded a migrant bus for the first time.
This bold step challenges the Windy City's promise of shelter. With laws that guarantee shelter for those in need, the city faces a real test, managing this surge without turning its back on its values. It's a moment that asks, What happens when the Windy City meets a logistical nightmare?
From police stations to airports to shelters, Chicago city leaders are feeling the pressure to find more money, resources, and space for migrants.
The city's budget is already tense and under immense pressure, sparking debate among city officials and leaders about the cause of action.
Another migrant shelter in Chicago closes its doors.
The city of Chicago has closed four temporary migrant shelters, saying the individuals have been moved to other shelters.
Over the past year and a half, more than 35,000 new arrivals have been welcomed here in Chicago from the southern border.
I know folks may have questions about my style, but don't question my leadership.
Yeah, don't question my leadership. That's Mayor Brandon Johnson, Chicago mayor, who's also upset with how things are going, as is Eric Adams in New York City. And they're taking the heat because all these illegals coming in, and they know the responsibility lies with the Oval Office. And from time to time, they kind of squeak to try to call them out, but they've got to be careful. So what they do is just say, send us more federal dollars. I'll give you a perfect example of how the Biden administration has been relating to the Border Patrol. I want you to hear from a Border Patrol agent who is now retired. In fact, he was the Border Patrol chief under Biden until recently when he decided to retire, Raul Ortiz.
I've never had one conversation with the president or the vice president for that matter. And so I was the chief of the Border Patrol. I commanded 21,000 people. That's a problem.
I just saw 50 people today who had just crossed the border illegally. So something's not working.
We need to make sure that Central America, South America, Mexico, that those regions understand that if you pay a smuggler and you cross in between the ports of entry and you do not have a legitimate claim to some sort of asylum benefit, you're going to be sent back.
Do you believe that the White House has sent mixed messages to migrants?
Yeah, most definitely.
Yeah, most definitely, and credit CBS News for airing that. In the meantime, Missouri Senator Hawley is pressing Mayorkas on where are the children?
How many of the children, nearly 100,000 children, in the you've read the New York Times reports, I assume, Mr. Secretary.
I have read many reports, Senator Hawley.
But do you know what I'm talking about with the number of children who have been sent to operate heavy machinery, who are not being paid, who are not going to school, who are being denied food, migrant children unaccompanied, who are now in the clutches of labor traffickers? You're familiar with this, right?
That is precisely why I revised our worksite enforcement.
Good. How many of the kids have you gotten back then? 85,000 or more now lost contact. With it's been months since you were last year. How many of those children have you rescued?
Can you give me a number? You are conflating issues.
So you can't give me a number. You haven't rescued any of these children. You haven't gotten any of them back.
You are conflating issues and what is within our remit and what is outside of it.
Okay. Well, it doesn't sound to me like this is a priority, and I have to tell you that's what your own agents tell me as well.
And we're going to get into that in more detail in the next hour. Also, later in this hour, law professor Jonathan Turley says in his deposition last week, Hunter Biden basically made the case to impeach his father. And the state of Oregon's grand experiment to legalize drugs is over after hundreds of lives are lost. We'll get into that before we wrap up this hour. But first, Hans von Spakovsky on today's ruling by the Supreme Court that states cannot keep Donald Trump off the ballot. That's a very powerful ruling. That's still to come. Lock and load. Ready on the right.
You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
Pigeons, they are everywhere, and they're very good at dive bombing freshly washed cars. Wellington Environmental reminds you, those droppings are more than a nuisance, they can be a major health issue, especially massive droppings on buildings or in parking garages. So who do you call to safely clean it up? You do what many hospitals, universities, public buildings already do. You call Wellington Environmental. Wellington Environmental has been dealing with all kinds of hazards for 35 years. Special people, special skills, special equipment. Wellington gets it done. So to avoid health issues ranging from pigeon droppings to mold to chemical leaks, contact Wellington, 314-644-4930. 644-4930. 4930. WellingtonSTL.com. Wellington Environmental. Your world cleaner, better, safer. Be well with Wellington.
Tim Jones and Chris Arps in the afternoon.
Horace, Americans individually have lost over $4,000 in income and over $7,000 where you have a household with both parents working.
It shouldn't be, if the economy is stupid, we should just say, stupid! It's the economy. Unbelievable the devastation that Americans are feeling.
Tim Jones and Chris Arps, weekdays at 3:30 on News Talk STL.
What if everything you thought and believed to be true about owning and buying your home turned out to be wrong?
Straightforward, objective advice on the right way to make the most out of every dollar you put into your home.
We're the only country that has one of those. Most other countries, considering like Canada, the UK, they don't have long-term fixed-rate mortgages like that. They're all variable-rate mortgages.
HomeWise with Michael Midget, Sunday mornings at 9 on News Talk STL.
Great news for my sponsor, Napoli C. And it's no surprise to me, nor hundreds who have dined there. The first time I entered, it was clear Napoli C is unique. The decor, the fish, imaginative cocktails. And, of course, Napoli C is right next door to Napoli 3 in St. Charles. Napoli 2 is in Town and Country. The original Cafe Napoli is in Clayton. And I'm honored to endorse each of them. Visit any of the Cafe Napolis.
This is News Talk STL.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
All right, let's get right to it with our guest, Hans von Kapowski, the constitutional law expert, also served with the Federal Election Commission, now the Heritage Foundation. Hans, welcome aboard again, sir.
Thanks for having me.
So here we have the Supreme Court today in a unanimous ruling, saying Colorado cannot ban Trump from the ballot. Go ahead, sir.
Well, that's correct. And, no doubt this really upsets liberals, actually, for two reasons. I mean, one, because their attempts to get off the ballot everywhere is now void. But two, because I'm sure they were hoping that it would at least be a 5-4 decision so they can then use that in their attacks on the Supreme Court. And they didn't get either of those. Very important decision, very historic. This issue has never come up before, and even though Colorado was the official party in the lawsuit, this affects every state because what they said, what the Supreme Court said, is so broad that it voids, for example, what the Secretary of State in Maine did. It voids what a Cook County former traffic judge just did in Illinois. This ends all attempts to get Trump off the ballot, and while this was over his appearance on the primary ballot, this decision also means that if he becomes the nominee of the Republican Party, no state will be able to try to take him off the general ballot in the November election either.
Now, that is as things stand now. If by chance they find some court and some opportunity and way to convict him of something that amounts to a felony before general election, is that in place still?
No. No state court, no state official has the authority to enforce Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. That's what the Supreme Court said. Only Congress can enforce that provision. And for anybody who says, oh, well, maybe the Congress can do something about it, well, remember, Congress already did something about it. They tried to impeach him under the second time, they impeached him a second time and claimed he had engaged in insurrection, and they acquitted him in the Senate.
And to that extent, I mean, if we're looking at the 14th Amendment, and we've had that discussion with you before, that's built off of the fallout from the Civil War to make sure no Confederate generals or leaders were able to be in power again that might want to overthrow the U.S. again.
No, that's exactly right. And look, by basically saying that state officials just don't have the power to enforce this, the Supreme Court didn't even have to get into any of the issues about, well, did he or did he not commit insurrection? Does he actually fit within Section 3 as an officer? They didn't have to get into any of those other questions that were brought up in the case because they said none of that matters.
Well, there was
states can't do this.
There was an underlying vote that doesn't affect the overall on a 5-4 division that included conservative justice appointed by Trump. Amy Coney Barrett joined the court's three liberals, saying that they maybe went too far in resolving Trump's case by also determining the only way to enforce it, the 14th, is through a statute by Congress.
Well, they basically said we don't need to reach the question of what federal officials have the power to enforce Section 3. But the end result is that the end result is still the same. You know, it's 9-0 overturning what these states did, and there's no way that anything else, liberals can do anything else. I don't think even with the federal government, even with Biden's control of the federal government, I don't think there's anything they can do to keep him off the ballot.
Let me read part of what Amy Coney Barrett put out in a statement. The majority's choice of a different path leaves the remaining justices with a choice of how to respond. The court has settled a politically charged issue in the volatile season of a presidential election, particularly in this circumstance. Writings on the court should turn the national temperature down, not up. For present purposes, our differences are far less important than our unanimity, I should say. Why do you think she was taking the approach that the justices were not going about it the right way?
I have to tell you, I had a discussion with some of my other lawyers here, and I don't understand why in the world she issued this little one-page concurrence. I mean, it's superfluous. I don't know what point she was trying to make. I think it's an unimportant point, and frankly, I just don't understand why she even wrote it.
You know what I compare it to, and maybe you can set me right, I compare it to Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Even though she was not on the court during Roe v. Wade, she had made the decision or made the statement that the court went too far and should have just went beyond the case it had presented to it. Is that what Amy Coney Barrett is trying to hook into?
I don't know. You know, what she specifically says is we could have decided this case without deciding whether federal legislation is the exclusive way for enforcing this provision. Well, I don't know what other means she thinks would be out there to do it, which is why I say this little one-page statement, two paragraphs, really doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I also, as you know, there was a concurring opinion written by the three liberal justices. Concurring means you agree with the result, you don't necessarily agree with the reasoning. And that concurrence by the three liberals also doesn't make a lot of sense. I think they issued it just because they know that the left is going to be mad as hell at them and is going to criticize them. And so they had to write something to try to distinguish themselves from the conservatives on the court. But again,
I was out of the room. I was out of the room when the vote was taken.
Yeah, their concurrence also is pretty meaningless because the end result is 9 votes to overturn what Colorado did.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear from a learned man like you that you couldn't understand what Amy Coney Barrett did, because I read it and I thought, I'm totally lost. There's something else that we keep in mind is that last Friday, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit ruled that some of the criminal defendants charged in connection with the Capitol riot, January 6th, had their sentences improperly increased. What does that say about the backstory?
Well, I think that was the correct decision because that they had their sentences enhanced because they had supposedly interfered with the system of justice. Well, interfering with the system of justice is when you try to disrupt a court, you know, or a trial or something like that. It doesn't apply to Congress's count of Electoral College votes. And that's what the court said. So all of these people who were charged with that, they were overcharged. But then the government has been going after them like an Italian mob boss, waging a vendetta. I mean, think how severely they've treated these people who, they engaged in criminal trespass of the Capitol, but they weren't burning, looting, and engaging in the kind of violence we saw from Black Lives Matter and Antifa in cities all over the country. And what did the U.S. Justice Department do about that? Why, they did nothing about that.
Well, the footage that JC's 6 committee released showed embattlement with police and shields and so forth. A lot of that, but they didn't show those who were just simply walking in and staying behind the velvet ropes and just taking pictures. They were all wrapped up in this.
Yeah, they were. And in fact, they didn't show, the J6 committee didn't show the Capitol Hill police officers acting as tour guides for those folks.
Well, they did for the shaman, I should say. They basically were taking him room to room, 3 or 4 with him, if he was going to cause any action. I think he actually led them in a prayer at one point in the House.
He did.
Now, the Democrats have already indicated that if Trump should win, well, we're going to fight the certification of the votes. And they have done that. They have done that in the past with Hillary Clinton when she lost, did they not?
They did, but don't forget that there was a big push by Democrats, which was successful, led by Amy Klobuchar, to amend the Federal Electoral Count Act so that when you want to make an objection to certification, it used to just take one representative and one senator. Now it takes a lot more. So they've made it tougher. The Democrats actually made it tougher for themselves to do that.
I think they outfoxed themselves at what they did.
Yeah, they did.
But what I also find again in this is that with this ruling out of the court the other day that sentences were improperly increased, does that mean a lot of them are going to be rolled back and many will be freed fairly soon because for time already served for what their sentence should have been?
Well, it depends on what else they were charged with, but to the extent that they had their sentences lengthened because they were charged with interfering with the administration of justice, that's going to have to be taken out of their sentence.
Well, I also recall Hillary Clinton saying, after the election, of course, she did call Trump and concede, but the very next day was talking about, I had the popular vote, we need to just get rid of the Electoral College entirely. Not to me, that's really right. Fighting against the electoral votes.
Yeah, well, that's something the left has wanted for a long time, and getting rid of the Electoral College vote would mean that the big cities on the East and West Coast, they would decide who's president and the rest of the country wouldn't matter.
As they're trying to make happen. Hans von Spakovsky, we always appreciate your expertise, sir.
Sure, thanks for having me.
We'll do it again. Constitutional law expert at the Heritage Foundation. Coming up, as you well know, last week Hunter Biden was giving testimony behind closed doors. We've heard a bit of what he had to say. Well, law professor Jonathan Turley says what Hunter said in those depositions, he might have actually helped make the case against his father for impeachment even stronger. Stand by, please.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
I got an email which brought a smile. A woman named Mary wrote me, "We are purchasing a new roof from John Beale based on your recommendation." I thanked her then. I do it again now. Mary, I only endorse clients I believe in, and I've been a spokesman for John Beale for 10 years. It's all about trust. So if, like Mary, you need John Beale, trust me. Call 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
The United States Deputy Sheriff's Association is a national nonprofit and the largest non-governmental provider of services to law enforcement. The USDSA assists city, county, state, and federal agencies with free safety equipment donations and officer survival training, along with cash donations to families of law enforcement officers who perish in the line of duty, a citizen awareness program, and more. For more information on United States Deputy Sheriff's Association, please visit usdeputy.org.
I like supporting local companies that give back to the community. For more than 40 years, Vincent's Jewelers has helped raise more than $1.5 million for local charities. So I'm personally asking that when you're shopping for jewelry, give Vincent's a chance. And in turn, Vincent's will give even more to our community. On Olive, just east of 270, new specials every day on vincentsjewelers.com or Vincent's Facebook.
News, analysis, opinion.
USA, USA! That's a big game, man!
She's really losing control.
People in China didn't ask me about people blowing each other down in a mall.
This is News Talk STL.
It is their responsibility.
Hate is metastasizing Asia.
We're all keeping a close eye on this.
Legal immigration is crazy right now.
The United States is not being overrun.
News Talk STL.
It is a crisis at the border without question.
At NewsTalkSTL.com.
McGuire Moving will come to your home or office and give you a free, honest appraisal. Not over the phone. That way you won't be shocked come moving day. Really tight budget? McGuire will offer advice that could save you even more money. McGuire, fully licensed and insured, also has climate-controlled storage for you. McGuireMoving.com. It's that simple. Just remember, you're moving anything, anytime, McGuireMoving.com.
This is News Talk STL. This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
What Hunter Biden did is he confirmed the essential elements of what has been alleged by these committees, that they received a great deal of money from Russia, from China, from Ukraine, and at least $40,000 of Chinese money made it into the account of President Biden. Now, this is the same person who said that his son didn't make any money in China. It turns out he not only made money, but President Biden received some of that money. He also confirms other aspects of this. Well, what he keeps on saying is a mantra is that all of this was perfectly legal. He adds that it's perfectly ethical, which is really something that left many of us dumbfounded. You know, you can say that influence peddling can be done legally, but no one argues it's done ethically. It is corrupt.
It is corrupt. It's not ethical. That's Jonathan Turley, George Washington law professor. I also want to point out he's an analyst for Fox News, so obviously he would lean more to the right, but he has also made some rulings, or should decisions and his statements that tend more to the center or sometimes even a little bit to the left, depending on your view. But he's saying, based on what we've seen come out of the Hunter Biden deposition from last week behind closed doors, some of the comments that were presented, and the transcript that followed, he said everything in there points that Hunter Biden did not do his daddy any service. It didn't roll over on him, but then the things he had to either confirm or say, that one I don't remember. In fact, I remember one of the congressmen that was watching this and part of the deposition said there were times he was very intent on making sure, yes, I remember that specifically. Other times, I don't know, I might have been drunk or coked out. I don't remember that. And usually those points were the ones that were the most damning. But then he also acknowledged some other things, which, as you and Jonathan Turley say, that's strange. That's strange because you're basically admitting to a crime, regardless of what you think ethics are, you're admitting to a crime. Jonathan Turley also said, the more you look at the transcript, and go over it, the more evidence that Hunter Biden provided to prosecutors to go ahead and move forward to impeach Joe Biden.
What we now know is that the president was involved and was confirmed by Hunter Biden is involved in a great number of these meals, these dinners, these meetings. He was clearly aware of his son's dealings with foreign governments. He lied during the campaign. But more importantly, he had to be aware that his son was influence peddling. It was being covered in some of the media. We have a tape recording on the laptop from President Biden dealing with a New York Times article that deals with his foreign dealings. So, you know, the statement of the president is manifestly false. And a lot of this confirmed that. So the question is, what do we do about that?
That's the key. What are we going to do about it? Now, if the Democrats have their way, you're just going to look away. The same Democrats that were claiming all the time that they had proof positive and witnesses, according to Adam Schefflis, that we had Donald Trump wrapped up with Russians colluding to win the election against Hillary. Never materialized. He never brought forth a so-called witness. He never brought forth so-called evidence. But every day they'd come out of that closed hearing and they'd say, well, we can't give you details, but it's going to be really, really bad for Trump. They put the image in your head. It's like it's much like you might have heard some cases in a jury trial or something. And if one of the attorneys say, don't think of a white elephant. Well, you know what the jurors are going to start thinking of. It's a white elephant. For what reason? I don't know. He said, don't think of it. So suddenly it's in my head. Everything Hunter Biden said the other day and what he did inside behind closed doors did not help Joe Biden. Of course, maybe he went in with the idea, I'm here to help Hunter Biden. You think? Well, South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley did win her first GOP nominating contest yesterday. She won the D.C. primary. No surprise there. That was expected, that she would win over Donald Trump in the primary. And, of course, she continues to pledge to stay in the race through tomorrow, which is Super Tuesday. I'll discuss that in just a moment. She got 63% of the GOP primary vote to 33% for Trump. Something like a little over 2,000 Washington Republicans actually cast ballots. And because Haley got more than half the vote, she came away with all the 19 delegates from the District of Columbia. It's a long ways from the number, I think it's 2515, that you would need, but I'll come back to that in a moment. Trump, of course, won the Missouri caucus. No surprise there either. But there is a new survey out. A New York Times Siena College poll found Saturday, if the 2024 presidential election were held today, who would you vote for if the candidates were Joe Biden and Donald Trump? Again, this is New York Times Siena. Trump, 48%. Biden, 43%. The margin of error, they say, is 3.5%, so that's well within the margin. The poll revealed additional positive results for Trump. He gains with women. That's a surprise for many. And Latinos. They point out that he has cut into more traditional Democrat constituencies. Women who strongly favored Biden 4 years ago are now equally split. Men giving Trump a 9-point edge. And the Trump, according to this poll, edging out Biden among Latinos. And Biden's disapproval increases. The working class voters deserting Biden. That was something else pointed out in this poll. Working class voters of color who did not attend college also continue to erode. Biden won 72% of those voters in 2020, according to exit polling. And that provided him nearly a 50-point edge over Trump. This latest that came out Saturday, the New York Times Siena poll showed Biden only narrowly, leading among non-white voters who did not graduate from college. He leads 47% to 41%. Now, you might say, well, that's still pretty close. I mean, close, but then again, it's 6 points difference, big deal. But you take that 47% for Biden, compare it to 72% last time, there's your disparity. And when it came to enthusiasm, 48% of those surveyed said they were enthusiastic about Trump. 23% said the same for Biden. How can you get enthusiastic about the guy unless he likes the same ice cream you do? My question. So tomorrow we have Super Tuesday. The largest number of states will be holding primaries and caucuses. Over a third of all the available delegates for both the Republican and Democrat nomination will be at stake tomorrow. Now, Biden is obviously the leading contender for the Democrat nomination. He has no real primary challenge. Former President Trump continues to lead. Nikki Haley got, as I said, 9 delegates or 19 out of D.C. the other day, and she's got a few scattered here and there. But in two of the Super Tuesday states, Colorado and Maine, where Trump was being accused of engaging in an insurrection, they were trying to get him disqualified. Now that ruling has been made by the U.S. Supreme Court. Be interesting to see how that shakes out. So registered voters in those states holding the presidential nominating contest will go to the polls and be voting. 15 states will be holding GOP contests. Alabama, Arkansas, California, Colorado, Maine, Massachusetts, Minnesota, North Carolina, Oklahoma, Tennessee, Texas, Vermont, Virginia are holding primaries. 2 states, Alaska and Utah, holding caucuses. 11 of the 15 are holding GOP primaries that are open to more than just registered Republicans. And here is something to watch. It's happened before. Would not be surprised if it happens again. In these primaries, it is often a common tactic of the opposing party to send their voters in to vote for someone other than the leading candidate trying to diminish his lead and his availability. So we might see Haley getting more numbers in some of those states that are open to more than just registered Republicans. And again, we have all these delegates. I said 1,250 earlier. It's 1,215 delegates total that are needed to win the nomination. But on Tuesday, the Democrat primaries will allocate a total of 1,420 delegates. They need 1,968 delegates to win the Democrat primary. But to win the Republican primary, you need 1,215. It's going to be interesting. We'll be watching it, of course, and it'll be late tomorrow. There'll be some elections called before then, but it's really going to be at the end of the day. And then, of course, what happens after that? Well, the remaining states will continue to hold their primaries over the next several months. The final 4 primaries of the campaign will be June 4. That would be Montana, New Jersey, New Mexico, South Dakota. They all hold Republican and Democrat primaries. And D.C. will then hold a Democrat primary. No surprise who's going to win there, right? So we'll be watching for that for tomorrow. In 2020, the state of Oregon was the first in the nation to decriminalize personal use of drugs. What? We said that? What? What? What are you thinking? Well, what could go wrong? Now they know, and the state of Oregon is reversing course when we continue.
You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want to give someone something which they will really enjoy? Give them a Cafe Napoli gift card. You pick the amount. They pick which of the Cafe Napolis they want to visit. Cafe Napoli in Clayton, Cafe Napoli in Town and Country, Napoli 3 on the streets of St. Charles, or right next door, Napoli C. The Napoli gift card. It's the perfect gift for anyone or your entire office. Cafe Napoli. Cafe Napoli.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
Oregon lawmakers walking back their controversial drug leniency policy, voting to recriminalize certain drugs. This after overdose deaths skyrocketed in the state, with Portland becoming an epicenter of the fentanyl crisis. Our next guest says the shocking policy never should have happened and made Oregon look like a national dumpster fire. Let's bring Oregon State Senator Minority Leader Republican Tim Knott.
The voters of Oregon were sold a bill of goods through an initiative that was on the ballot, and it decriminalized all hard drugs, so fentanyl, heroin, cocaine, what have you, methamphetamine, And so what happened was is that instead of treatment that the voters thought they were going to get for their family and friends who were on drugs and addicted, they ended up getting unbridled drug use, drug sales all over our major cities across Oregon. And it turned into an exponential increase in overdose deaths, and it's now about 4 Oregonians a day are dying because of overdoses.
4 a day, because the state of Oregon back in 2020 thought it'd be a good idea if we just decriminalize a lot of these drugs, let them have them for personal use. As I said earlier, what could go wrong? 4 deaths a day? That's just part of it. So the state Senate the other day approved a House bill, 21-8. The Senate did, after the House passed it, 51-7. Now it goes to the governor, who said she's open to signing the bill to roll it back, stating, according to the Democrat Senate Majority Leader of Portland, "With this bill, we're doubling down on our commitment to make sure Oregonians have access to treatment and care they need. This will be a real start and transformative change for our justice system." They were legalizing drugs such as heroin, methamphetamine, making them a misdemeanor, punishable by up to 6 months in jail. That is still in this part of this law. It enables police to confiscate the drugs and crack down on them if they're being used on sidewalks and parks. And then they're offered drug treatment as an alternative to going to jail. Well, of course, they're going to take the drug treatment for the period of time, go back out and do it all over again. The state of Oregon put this on their own communities. And they're directly responsible. Those who thought this would be a good idea are directly responsible. Now, you heard in that Portland, Oregon TV report, or the state senator from Oregon said the idea originally was some families thought, maybe it'll help my child or someone I know who's addicted get help. It didn't get them help. It gave them a chance to have drugs more freely and to not be arrested and charged with anything until finally they overdid the drugs. One of those fighting against this bill called it a return to the war on drugs that disproportionately impacted and imprisoned millions of black men. They're referring actually to what happened as a fact. But it wasn't just black men, it's just that they were more dealing, and that mainly was built around crack, not heroin, because the rich white had access to heroin, and the black market was for crack. But in the midst of all of this comes this word. There's an overdose death in Colorado, and it makes 2 of them now, that now they have linked to something that is called nitazene. There are various synthetic drugs that fall under these nitazenes. This drug and its variants can be 10 times as potent as fentanyl. Now, if you've got, and apparently someone who gets a Narcan shot, if they're dealing with fentanyl, it will help save them. You have to hit the person 3, maybe 4 times to save their life if they have nitazene. You may not know it until you realize they're not responding. You need to tell your children, be very careful of taking anything from anyone they don't know if it's been open like a soda, and don't leave it out for someone to tamper with it before it's given to them, and don't be taking what looks to be like a candy. Do not do that. Coming up in the next hour, is VP Harris overstepping the leftist progressive line? And remember our pledge, one nation under God.